Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be speaking with Ray Pugsley, a spinal champion who's had multiple spine surgeries over the course of almost 30 years. As a lifelong athlete and elite runner, Ray was discouraged and frustrated when a pain in his back grew so bad that he could barely stand up straight. Fortunately, Ray was able to find the right spine treatments to address his pain and was able to return to running. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Ray's story.
When I joined my high school track team, I discovered my love of running, and it has been an important part of my life ever since. During my time at Dartmouth College, I raced competitively for both track and cross country. After college, I continued competing in running and joined a team called the Reebok Enclave based out of DC, which was an elite running group. At that time, one of my goals was to try to make the Olympics. I actually qualified for the Olympic trials in 1992 in the steeplechase, and then 1996 in the 5,000 meters on the track.
Ray didn't know that his qualifying race would lead to his first experience with back pain. He felt a stabbing pain in his lower back while warming up, but was able to get through the Olympic trials and finals, finishing in sixth place. The pain, though, didn't go away. In fact, 2 days later, he was unable to walk upright.
It was so very discouraging and frustrating for me to go from running in the Olympic trials to not being able to stand up without pain all within a few days. When I returned home after the trials, I visited a spine specialist where I learned that I had a herniated disc in L5 S1 and subsequently had a lumbar discectomy for that herniated disc in August of 1996 at 27 years of age and just a couple of months after being in the Olympic trials.
Grateful to have a course of action, Ray underwent the surgery and he was able to return to running once again.
I was so excited to return to the sport that I love so much after my surgery. It was truly a relief when I was able to start to run and compete again, this time without pain. In fact, I went on to run all of my fastest track times just 2 years later in 1998.
While his initial back surgery was successful, Ray did need to have additional surgeries for his back. In 2003, he underwent an anterior lumbar interbody fusion, otherwise known as an ALIF. After that surgery, he was able to get back to running in about 4 months. Finally, in 2014, he needed another lumbar discectomy, which once again went very well with a full recovery.
After each of my surgeries, I felt very fortunate that I was able to return to the athletic activities that I love so much. Now, at age 53, I am still very active and really have no daily symptoms related to spine pain. Many people incorrectly believe that spine surgery, back surgery, will leave you debilitated for a lifetime. In fact, I have found that it is often the key to getting back to the life you love and the person that you want to be.
That is so true, Ray. There can be a fear that back surgery is the end of your life, but it truly can help most people return to the life that they love. Your story is incredible and is such a sign of hope and inspiration to others who might be experiencing the same type of back pain. Ray, I'm so delighted to have you here with me today. And you have just always been somebody who I just admire and love following your story and your journey. Your story shows how even the most elite of athletes can face back pain and how quickly it can take over your life. Tell us more. What was it like running the Olympic trials and, you know, getting to that point and then just literally a couple of days later, not being able to stand up and walk. What was that experience like? Talk to us about your emotions and how that felt.
I mean, truly, I was really scared, not only when it first happened, but also just discussing my path forward from that point on. I mean, I was just stretching before the first round of the trials, doing normal stretching, and felt this just searing pain in my back, which clearly didn't feel right, but I didn't know what it was. And fortunately, the onset of the pain was a couple days delayed in terms of the debilitating pain. So I was able to get through the races and finish sixth. And I was very proud of my performance and ready to celebrate. And then from there, it just went downhill. And again, I was really scared. I got back home so that I could get some treatment. And when I finally talked to my spinal doctor and was informed that there was a problem there and surgery was necessary, I mean, I was really scared. And I distinctly remember being in the office and trembling and feeling dizzy. I went into just shock just hearing the terms.
And scary.
I was like, gosh, am I ever going to be able to run again? And the doctor said that I would be able to run again and explained that my spine and the discs shouldn't really be the primary mechanism for holding myself up. It's a strong core. And that if we do this surgery and you have good PT and you take care of yourself and do all the things to make yourself a strong, healthy athlete, that everything should be fine going forward. And, you know, the recommendation was live your life now. Could there be future problems down the road? There could be, but we'll just address them as they come up and live your life now. And that's what we did.
Yeah. And that is so awesome. I mean, I think also there are genetic components to our lives or things we can't predict how our body's going to react or change over time for sure. But I love that sort of the spirit of we're going to take care of you now. You're going to do the things you need to do to get better and you're going to live your life now. And if things happen, we'll address them when they happen. That must have felt so hopeful to you at that point.
It did. And it was, as we talk about, you know, people used to think once you had back surgery, you know, what are you going to do? And as I went through this surgery, my mom and dad, of course, were there and they were like, you can't run anymore. And they're kind of in the old school way of thinking.
Right.
And I remember them having a conversation with my doctor and my doctor said, why shouldn't he run? This is going to fix him. Everything is going to be great going forward. And my mom and dad were very skeptical, but, sure enough, 2 years later, I was running faster than I ever had before.
Well, whoa. 2 years after your surgery, you were running faster than you ever had before.
Yes.
That is amazing.
I think there are a lot of injuries that people get or problems that they get. They come on slowly and you don't really realize they're coming on slowly. And I wasn't fully aware of how limited I was by my back problem until it crossed a certain threshold.
That's so interesting.
And then once I had the surgery, everything was freed up. All my biomechanics were freed up to work as they were supposed to. And I was able to capitalize on that. And with my fitness, I was able to improve my fitness and thus improve my running and ran my fastest times. It was pretty amazing. And
that is so awesome. So awesome. Yeah. Ray, when your doctor talked with you about core strengthening and going through your physical therapy, did you learn things in that process that you didn't know before, even though you were an elite athlete?
Yes. One of the main things is I think everybody thinks that their core is, you know, the muscles that you would get from doing simple sit-ups, your six
belly,
pack,
yeah,
so to speak. And your the core is a lot broader than that. And if your whole core isn't strong, then there's instability there and it lends itself to aches and pains, maybe not just spinal aches and pains, but sore hips and, you know, tight hamstrings and all kinds of things. So I learned how to strengthen my core. One of the things I'm most amazed about is that the PTs taught me I needed to brace myself when I got up out of a chair, off of a bed, anything where I was getting up, I had to learn how to brace my core and it had to be right away. And I was like, how am I ever going to learn that? This is something I've got to think about. I'm going to think about that for the rest of my life. Well, fortunately for me, somehow, I don't know how, but I picked it up quickly And to this day, I almost laugh sometimes when I get up, and as I'm finishing getting up, I realized I went through all that bracing necessary to get up, and it was subconscious and I didn't think about it. And I think how wonderful that is that, you know, all these years, decades later, I'm able to do so many things. And I do give credit, a lot of it, to my ability to go through the PT process and trust it and learn how to do it properly, and reflects well on what I've been able to do since that first surgery.
That is just absolutely amazing. And I think myself, having gone through spine surgery and going through PT and being a doctor, I was astounded at how much I learned through that physical therapy process. And really, what does that mean? Engaging your core and moving from your core, and having that core help support everything that you do. I mean, your spine is just, you know, it's the foundation, and all those ligaments, muscles sort of attach on, and your body moves from that strong spine. So it's like, you've got to have the strong spine, but you've got to have the strong muscles that support the spine. So it's all interrelated and connected. And core doesn't just mean abs, six pack abs. So I think, that's true. And Ray, you're running competitively now, I think, right? You're doing masters running, or what does that picture look like now?
I do. I really, you know, 5K was my specialty. I really like the 5K, you know, nice short. I don't need to go and do all the marathons. Lots of other people, I'll let them do that. But I get a kick out of being twice, sometimes well more than twice the age of the people that I'm competing against at the end of a race.
Nice.
And I like the look in people's eyes when we finish and I'm a top finisher and they say, "How old are you?" And I tell them my age and they're like, "Whoa," pretty rewarding.
Yeah. You're a dad, you've got teenage children, and you're beating the young guns out there. So that's nice. That feels good. I'm sure that feels good.
I catch them by surprise when they see me at the starting line and I'm, you know, an old man over there, and I hang with them. I it's kind of fun.
Well, Ray, I think, you know, thinking about spine and back and spine, I think there's a perception out there that running's bad for your back. You know, you're pounding the pavement and, you know, it's just not a good activity for spine. But studies do now show that spines of runners can actually be healthier than those who don't run. And we, as you know, you've been part of our annual 5K race or walk, depending on how you approach that, but the 5K called the We've Got Your Back race. It's the nation's largest celebration of healthy spines. And this year's race is going to take place on World Spine Day, which is October 16th, in the midst of Spine Health Awareness Month. And you, once again, are participating in the event. What are your recommendations for people who might be interested in running, but are just starting out? What advice do you have? I know you're a running coach as well. So what coaching advice can you give to people?
Yeah, as a longtime runner and someone who's coached a lot of people, two words that I always use when I talk to either individuals or groups about this very topic is patience and consistency. When you're trying to improve your fitness, it's not a skill that show me how to do it once and boom, you can do it. You have to put the work in and be patient with it. And you have to be consistent. So you want to make sure that as you're stepping into an exercise routine, that you're planning a routine that is realistic for you and fits into your work-life balance, so that it's a positive for everybody around you. If you try to bite off more than you can chew, not only is it hard to reach your daily, weekly goals, which is discouraging, and then makes it easy for you to kind of back off and not continue with the routine, but also it can be frustrating for your family if all of a sudden it's all about you and you've got to put time in exercising. So I always tell people, you know, pick something that you can be consistent with, fit it into your lifestyle, let everybody be your cheerleaders as you're getting yourself fit. And if you can expand that commitment, then great. Let it expand to fit into the rest of your mm-hmm. life, as I said. But being that real consistency is and being patient to allow the fitness to come along while you're being consistent. Not only does it teach your body how to come forward, but it also teaches you mentally mm-hmm. how to push yourself. And those are the two things that you need to be successful when you're doing an endurance activity.
So patience and persistence. be how we'd summarize.
And consistency, patience and consistency.
Patience and consistency, right.
You throw some persistence in there sure, yeah. That works.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we live in a fast world, right? Fast food, fast news, Instagram, instant message, instant all that. But really, this is something that just takes the time, right? It just takes the consistent time.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, I tell myself the time's going to go by anyway. So don't short circuit it by giving up too soon and not being consistent with that, because your future self will appreciate the consistency and you'll get there. And that's sometimes hard to stick with, right? And that's where coaching comes in and community. Yep. Comes in. I know you run some programs out here in Virginia that are just so great for people to engage with and get involved with. I know I've personally enjoyed seeing that and participating in that.
Okay. A couple other comments on that. It's also really useful for people to understand that as you build endurance, every time you exercise, it doesn't have to be really hard. As a matter of fact, that's incorrect. If you're exercising hard every day, then your body can't recover from exercise episode to exercise episode. And then you get run down, burnt out, frustrated,
injured.
So it's often
there's a fine line between pushing yourself and injuring yourself, right?
Absolutely. So a lot of people are very relieved when they find out that they don't have to kill themselves every day exercising. But you know, for a type A person, sometimes you think no pain, no gain. If I'm not pushing myself to the limit, why am I bothered doing it? That's just not how it works with endurance sports. So taking the time to appreciate rest, easy days, and sure, put in hard efforts here and there, but making sure that it's not hurting. It's not so hard every day that you start to go, oh my gosh, I don't think I have it in myself to exercise today. No, exercise should be a positive part of that day. So allow yourself to exercise in comfort too. Even that may sound like an oxymoron, but really you should get to the point where it's a positive, very happy part of your day.
Right. And I've heard people say, you know, what's the famous quote? The best exercise you do is the exercise you do. You know, meaning do it.
Yeah.
So whether it's taking a walk or a swim or a run or a yoga class or a Pilates or just, you know, comfortable stretch, whatever exercise it is, do the exercise you do, because again, it's that consistency. And when you say consistency, you're not saying the same thing every day. You're saying put the penny in the bank, right? You put the penny in the bank every day.
Yes. The nice thing about running and walking in any endurance sport is that if you are patient and consistent, to use those terms again, you will improve. You'll be better next week, next month, next 6 months than you are now if you put in that time. Not every activity can you say 100% you will move forward, but with endurance stuff, just by increasing your fitness, increasing your strength, increasing your flexibility and mobility, you'll move forward and you'll see the results if you're patient.
That's great. Ray, one of the things when people think about running, maybe not being good for your back and pounding the pavement and, you know, do the shoes matter that I wear? And, you know, how do I get the right footwear, or does it matter what I wear? You know, running's an accessible sport, meaning all you need to do is throw on a pair of shoes and get out there and do it. But what shoes should I wear? Do the shoes matter? And what does that picture look like? And I think you know a thing or two about running shoes and how that affects your wellness as you're walking or running or jogging. Can you share I know you have a lot of deep knowledge in this area. Can you share some of that knowledge with us today?
Sure. And my effort to, as I was getting to the end of my running career, to extend my time in my passion, I ended up with some family members opening up running stores. So we sell running shoes as our business now. So I'm very well versed in the equipment necessary to walk and run. And what people don't realize is how advanced technical running shoes, technical walking shoes are. There are a lot of shoes that just kind of, they look like running shoes and you think, I'll just pick that up. And there are definitely products out there that are designed to look good in jeans when you're going out and so forth. But technical running equipment, especially the shoes, has a lot of technology and they're very specific. And getting the shoe that is right for your foot has big ramifications in terms of your ability to stay healthy and enjoy being an active person. So what I always recommend is, rather than going to a self-serve shoe environment and looking for your favorite color, something on sale, your best friend's shoe that they're wearing, go someplace where someone can help guide you to get a good pair of shoes. It'll take, 20 to 30 minutes, but it's time well spent. And what that basically means is you get a shoe that contours your foot properly. It's supportive in the right ways so that it helps hold your foot on the ground in a position that is biomechanically efficient. So your body's not fighting itself and opening itself up to repetitive use, aches, and injuries. And once your body is in sort of the right position to take on walking or running, then that takes stress off of your whole body. And when the stress is taken off your whole body and allows your body to relax and perform the way it's supposed to, then you enjoy the exercise. Then you stay active and you can keep that consistency going and you get fitter and you see the results. And it's a self-fulfilling circle where around and around it goes. And everybody knows people who seem to be addicted to their daily run or their daily walk. And those are people that have found that sweet spot where their equipment is right, their training is right, and they've seen the feedback and they want more of it.
Right, right. That positive feedback loop, right? That just, you crave that great feeling. And that is awesome. Ray, we are, the National Spine Health Foundation. So people are tuning in from all across America. What do you say to people who maybe can't find a shoe expert in their community or don't know how to find that? Are there fitting experts across the nation? Are there websites or places where people, can go to understand more about shoe fitting? Or what does the shoe fitting landscape look like? I am lucky enough to live in a geographic area that can access the stores that your family runs, that you run with your family members in. And I got to say, it's awesome. But what if people don't have access to that or don't know about that? How do you learn about that?
Well, if you were to search in your area for what's called a run specialty store, there really are a lot of them sprinkled around the country. Most markets will have somebody who does what we do, where they can put you through a fitting process. So looking for a run specialty store, there are well more than 1,000 individual doors around the country. So that's really the first thing. I think most people, even if you're not sure that there's one near you, if you search, you'll be surprised to find there's something within an easy drive.
And a run specialty store is a store that would sell not just things for running, but also for walking, right? It's not, and that
Absolutely.
Seems intuitive to me because I've been to your store and I mostly walk. I mostly don't run, but some people might get confused about that language. So a run specialty store has great shoes and equipment to support running, but also walking activity.
That's a great point, Rita. And actually, rather than the word confused, I'd use the word anxious. A lot of people are anxious to come into a store like ours because the word run can be scary to some people. Either people don't run or they run a little bit and they don't consider themselves a runner. But if you can search for both run and walk and kind of not be intimidated by that term, you'll find that when you go in, runners and walkers, we consider them to be interchangeable in terms of what we do in the store. And we don't have a store full of elite runners. I would go out of business if I was serving people that come from my background. There aren't very many of us, and it's not a good business model.
Right.
So our kind of store is catered towards the regular athlete, the person who is everything from want to walk the dog to lose some weight and get better heart health, pick a big fitness goal. So going to a store like ours not only gets you great product, but a lot of knowledge. You can ask questions on everything, and it doesn't cost more. That's also something we struggle with, is people think that service is going to mean the shoes cost more, but that's not how our kind of shopping channel works. And all of our products are the same as you'd see in a lot of the self-serve big box stores and the online outlets. Now, if you are one of those people that doesn't have a store near you, you can do your best to see what you can find on research online. But I would recommend that when you're traveling, add a little extra time into your travel, whether that's business or vacation, to go to a run specialty store in a market where you're visiting.
That's a great suggestion. I love that. That's a great idea. That's wonderful. You know, speaking of searching for information, I think people often find the National Spine Health Foundation when they're researching treatment options for their back pain or neck pain. And we know that patients who face debilitating back or neck conditions can often feel lost, alone, overwhelmed. You know, but really we've built the Spinal Champion community, which you're part of and this podcast is part of, to offer support to people who are looking to take control of their spine health and learn and educate themselves about, you know, about how to make informed decisions for themselves. Tell me about your journey to learning about the National Spine Health Foundation.
Well, I think my journey may be a little unusual. Maybe that makes it interesting compared to other folks that have found out about the organization. But when the organization started many years ago and it was growing, I was kind of a exhibit A in terms of I was a high level, national level runner trying to make the Olympic team and had these issues and bounced back and with such great success. And that was noticed. And that combined with the fact that my profession was helping out with road races and helping people with equipment to stay active, all those things kind of came together to have the existing board invite me to join the board. And I can't remember the exact year it was, but I'll say it was a long time ago, well more than 10 years ago. And I was asked to join the board and I was honored to join the board. I am so passionate about how proper spine health and treatment and attention that was given to me has changed my life. And it sounds kind of maybe goofy a little bit, but it truly changed my life. If I didn't have that surgery after 1996, a couple months after the Olympic trials, I would not be active. I might even be in a wheelchair. I mean, it's who knows if this had happened to me 20, 30 years prior to that time, because I couldn't move. It was so painful. I can't even put in words how painful it was. Then it was all fixed. And every time I put on my shoes and go outside to run, I say a little prayer for the doctor that helped me and say, my goodness, I can't believe that I can do this yet again at 53 years old. So that passion, I've had that ever since I got through that first surgery and was happy to join the board and would like, I'll stay with the board as long as the board will have me.
That is awesome. And, you know, I've had the privilege of getting to know you, Ray, through my work here at the foundation and have seen your passion, dedication, commitment for many, many years to the National Spine Health Foundation. Tell me something that excites you about what the foundation is doing now. As you look at the organization, where it is and how things have grown and changed over time?
Well, there's several things. I really like how user-friendly the website is becoming in terms of being able to dispense and make available information. I remember back to that first day that I was told I needed some surgery and how incredibly scared I was. And I wished that even though the doctors assured me everything would be okay, I wanted to prove it to myself. And I wish there was a place where I could go and see lots of examples of people like me who had gone through it and came out on the other side just fine. That would have always been great. And that's what we've got going now is all these resources to provide hope. So that's one. Secondly, just the amount of technology and the amount of advancement as we see in all parts of life. Well, same thing in terms of spinal care. The advancements are incredible. And I think the future is just going to make it more and more accessible to people and recoveries will be faster. So that gets me really excited. And I also like the idea of being in a position where I can be helpful to other people by sharing my story. So a podcast like we're doing today is just one of the vehicles that the National Spine Health Foundation is making available to spread good word, good news, and hope. And I'm very excited to have the ability to be a part of that.
That is awesome, Ray. We're so lucky to have you on our board. We're so thankful that you've shared your story, and mostly just congratulations to your good health and your consistency and dedication to your health journey and sharing that with all of us. What a gift you are to so many, and definitely to us in many, many ways. So I thank you.
Well, thank you. I've got one final comment, if I may.
Yes, please.
A lot of folks will say to me you had, one surgery in 96 and another surgery in 2003 and another surgery in 2014. How do you define that as being successful? And the truth of the matter is I had a lot of problems in 1996, and with proper care and thinking through what the proper plan was, we addressed them in a way that allowed me to continue to live my life to the best ability that I could. And we knew that there were going to be future issues, and we addressed what we could in the near term to allow me to do what I wanted to do then. And we just addressed those issues as they came along. So none of them, the future surgeries, were surprises. And as a matter of fact, they were less scary as they came along, because not only did technology get better, but I had already had an experience with something maybe less significant than my second surgery. And I knew that it was going to be, following the plan, was going to be productive.
That's great advice. Yeah.
So for people out there who think that, are worried that what happens if there's something else that is necessary, I go back and say again, let the process play out and follow the good advice from your doctors and live your life and, just address the problems as they come along. Don't be afraid of problems. Don't borrow trouble. Live in the moment, address them, and move forward.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And Ray, just sort of in closing here, that is such important information, knowing that you might have this journey for your spine care and that you would just sort of start on that journey and address things as they come up, but be each time do what was needed to do to get you back to your full life. And that, I think, is also Yes. enabled by finding the right doctor for you. So just sort of one sort of last comment there. How did you choose your doctor, and how did you know that you had the right person working with you?
I think when you go to see a doctor, you should feel like the doctor you're communicating with understands your goals and understands what you want to do and will work within those parameters. The medical world is complicated, and there's not one answer for every problem, but there may be an answer that's best for you. And in my case, as an elite athlete, getting back to competing, especially after my first surgery when I was only 27, time is clicking on an athlete. You can't say, oh, well, in 10 years, you'll be back and ready to go. I was going to be too old by that point. So having a doctor that understood I needed to get back into what I did quickly allowed us to choose a procedure that allowed me to be running at my best ever 2 years later. And yes, I ended up needing some further surgery later on, which we knew would eventually come, but I was able to get back and take advantage of that time in my late 20s when I was going to be at my best. So having a doctor that knows your goals and you're on the same page is very reassuring and very rewarding if it goes according to plan.
Yeah, that is a message that we hear over and over, and we share over and over, that you've got to trust your doctor. You've got to find a relationship with the doctor who you trust and who you feel good about. And we've heard our medical and scientific board members say, this is a relationship that you are going to have with your surgeon, and you need to feel really good about that. And it's okay if you don't get a second opinion, right? And to your point, Ray, there, medicine is complicated, spine is complex. There are a number of different ways of approaching a similar problem. So find the one that's right for you in the care of a doctor who you trust and you feel good about. And that is easy to say, takes time and effort to put in, but it's worth it. I think it's worth it to put that time in. You have one spine, so you've got to take care of it. And that's what we're here, is to help people understand how to approach decision-making in their spine care and to learn from others like your story, Ray. I know that you inspire so many people and I know that your story gives people hope. And we are so appreciative for your time again today to come with us and take the time out of your busy life. I know you're so busy. Thank you for this very, very treasured time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to go through this again. If I have to go through this 1,000 more times in my life, I'll wish I could do it 1,001 more times. It's just, I'm passionate about it. And whenever I have the opportunity to share, I appreciate that. So thank you for giving me this opportunity.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain every year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.